I mean, going back to 1933, you had $20.67 to an ounce of gold. Now you've got $3,400 to an ounce of gold. Well, what does that tell you? Does it tell you gold's gone up? No, it tells you the dollar's gone down. It's not prices going up, but it's the currency going down. And when people actually do understand that, when the general population understands that...
You're watching Silver News Daily. Subscribe for more.
The dollar is dying, and almost nobody is ready for what comes next. Since 1933, it's lost over 99% of its value against gold. And now, according to former bank director Alastair MacLeod, the final stage of collapse has already begun. But here's the twist. It's not gold that's going to make the biggest move. It's silver. As the world rushes to escape fiat destruction, silver isn't just poised to rise. It's set to explode. Forget Kochsher's $50 or even $100. MacLeod and other top analysts are sounding the alarm for a possible moonshot past $500. This isn't hyperbole. It's a ticking time bomb buried beneath a paper financial system built on leverage, manipulation, and blind trust. Silver is historically cheap, structurally essential, and in dangerously short supply. And once the dominoes start falling, the masses won't have time to react. Only those who see it coming right now will be in position to benefit. So what's really behind this historic setup? And why are so many insiders racing to secure physical silver before the system implodes? Stick around, because once you understand what's happening behind the scenes, you'll never look at the dollar or silver the same way again.
Yes. I mean, obviously, there's always volatility in the prices of any commodity. But what I did was I thought I ought to have a look at metals prices in the context of the longer term, and particularly silver. Now, silver has been behaving as an industrial metal, and I've got, if you like, a basket of base metal prices going all the way back to 1900. And if you price that in gold, that is quite revealing. Bearing in mind that over reasonable periods of time, and I'm talking about decades, centuries, millennia even, the purchasing power of gold is relatively constant. I mean, the reason for this is that gold is accepted everywhere as money, and unlike Bitcoin, the supply increases, and it increases at a rate which, while it can vary, is more or less in line with the global population. So you have a stability, if you like, when you price anything in gold. And we certainly saw this up until the point where the Bretton Woods standard collapsed. The point is that if you take the prices at the beginning of the last century, so we're talking about over 127 years, you can see this stability in a basket of base metals priced in gold. But interestingly, recently, the value of these base metals priced in gold has actually declined quite significantly. And this year, it's standing at a roughly 77% discount to that 1990 level. Now, it always returned back to that level. Sometimes it'll go over, sometimes it'll undershoot, whatever. But what that indicates is that irrespective of what's happening to fiat currencies and their purchasing power, these base metals.
The destruction of the dollar didn't happen overnight. It's been a slow, methodical erosion of purchasing power that's taken nearly a century to play out. In 1933, a single dollar could buy over a 20th of an ounce of gold. Today, it takes nearly 2,000 of those same dollars to buy just 1 ounce. That's a loss of over 99% in real terms. And while most people go about their daily lives unaware, the value drain is accelerating. Inflation isn't transitory, and the Federal Reserve knows it. Despite holding interest rates at 5.25% to 5.50%, inflation is still running hot at 3.2%, and the dollar continues to weaken, down nearly 5% on the DXY over the past year. That's not just market noise. That's a currency losing credibility. Now, and when a currency loses credibility, everything priced in that currency begins to distort. Real estate, stocks, food, energy, it all becomes a moving target. But one asset class starts to shine: hard money. Gold has already begun its run, with central banks hoarding it at record levels. But silver? It remains shockingly overlooked. Yet silver is not just another precious metal. It's money, real money. And unlike fiat, it can't be printed into oblivion. As trust in the dollar fades, the rotation into tangible assets is picking up speed, and silver, with its explosive upside and suppressed price, is sitting at ground zero of the coming monetary quake.
So anyone who thinks that there is going to be a decent reaction in gold and they're going to be able to get into it and all the rest of it, I think they're going to miss it, I'm afraid. And that's the way it is. It's very under-owned. I mean, if you look at the other way of looking at this is gold, admittedly, but it's estimated that total portfolio assets around the world, global assets, are in the region of, I think the 2023 figure was $270 trillion. If you look just at the ETFs, that represents less than 0.2% of that. I'm talking about global ETFs. Now, the reason I would say ETFs is that in most of the world, in terms of portfolios, you have got investment regulation, and gold is not a regulated investment. So it's actually quite difficult for an investment manager to put raw gold, physical gold, into a portfolio, because he's got to argue the toss with his compliance officer. And, you know, do you want to do that? No, you don't. So what you do is you buy a gold substitute. That is why I think that the gold substitute in the form of ETFs, which is a regulated investment, is a fair indication of the level of gold interest in portfolios. Now, obviously, there is an element of wealth, and a fairly large element of wealth, I say a larger element of wealth than ETFs, held privately held as private wealth, not part of, if you like, the sort of regulated investment scene. So it's not recorded, if you like, in ETFs. But nonetheless, I mean, that's very concentrated in Asian hands. We know that. But when it comes to US, when it comes to UK, when it comes to EU, and when it comes to, you know, our friends in Australia and Japan, so on and so forth, gold is very under-owned. So if you get some sort of crisis and a flight into the dollar, which is what happened in 2008-09, people haven't got the gold to sell. They'll sell something else. So this is where I feel the downside in gold is very limited. And, of course, the other thing is, and this is desperately important, it's not so much the gold price has been rising, but the dollar has been falling. And so much so that we've even seen this in the trade-weighted index. So, in short, there is a lot of catching up to do. And I think it's all part and parcel of...
Silver has always been the sleeping giant of the monetary metals. Quiet, volatile, and often ignored. But when it moves with a vengeance. Historically, silver lags behind gold in the early stages of a crisis, only to slingshot past it once momentum kicks in. We saw it in 1980, when silver erupted from under $6 to nearly $50 in a matter of months. Again, in 2011, silver surged from $9 to nearly $50, outpacing gold's gains by a mile. And yet here we are in 2025, with gold once again breaking records, while silver is still hovering just under $40. That's not just undervaluation, it's a coiled spring. The gold-silver ratio is screaming it. Hovering between 84.7 and 90.38, it's at levels that have historically triggered massive silver outperformance. This isn't a random statistic, it's a flashing red signal. Every time the ratio has hit these extremes, silver has launched into a parabolic run. And the conditions today? They're arguably even more bullish than those past peaks. Inflation is baked in, the dollar is weakening, and the global economy is teetering on the edge of chaos. But unlike gold, silver has another card to play: industrial demand. It's not just a monetary hedge, it's a working metal, and the world is about to need more of it than ever before.
As a package, we can expect them over a period of time, we don't know how long, to increase roughly 3 to 4 times. Now, that is before you talk about the debasement effect of fiat currencies on metals prices. Now, this is very important. What it tells us in a nutshell is that base metals are more underpriced than they have been in the last 127 years. 25 years, sorry. This is really quite something. So this has significant implications. I mean, it's, we're not just talking about base metals, but if we're looking at other commodities, you're going to get a similar sort of message. And therefore, the implications for consumer prices, let's say on a 5 to 10 year view, is that they're likely to go considerably higher. So the rate of inflation, if you like, even though the government suppresses the numbers, will increase. But returning to silver, silver has been priced like one of these base metals, and there's nothing in it at all in terms of premium for its monetary role. But I think that is also going to return because gold is very, very underowned, and it's a racing certainty that as members of the public begin to catch up with what's gone in on in gold, they will, at the margin, prefer to buy silver rather than gold on the basis that gold has already gone up and silver, you know, has been left behind. So what we're looking at, in answer to your question, is silver is definitely on a tear and it's going to go considerably higher. And it's been doing it since I wrote that article. And I see this continuing. As far as gold is concerned, it's just been consolidating sideways. It's extraordinary how it's just moved sideways for the last, what, 2-3 months, consolidating and really providing a platform for the next rise up. In technical terms, we have what's called a pennant. You know, I mean, some would call it a triangle. And that triangle consists usually of about 5 legs. You know, you go down, up, down, up, down. Now, we're on the final down leg. And this actually coincides with option expiry for the August contract, which is on Monday. So I would expect to see gold drift off a little bit. But I mean, we're talking, what, 1, 2% sort of thing. I mean, this is not meaningful in the scheme of things. The other thing I would throw in is that this underpricing of metals as a whole is now leading to indigestion, if you like, in the papers markets. If you look at the best performing commodities this year so far, platinum, palladium, copper, silver, gold, it is extraordinary. And this is reflecting just how undervalued metals as a whole, precious or otherwise, have become.
Beneath the surface of the silver market lies a powder keg, one that's been packed tighter with every passing year, and at the center of it all is the paper-silver system. The COMEX, the very heart of silver trading, is now flashing signs of deep stress. Open interest for silver futures has surged to a 5-year high, up 15% just this year. That might sound like bullish sentiment, but in reality, it's institutional congestion. Too many contracts, too little actual metal. Analysts are calling it paper market indigestion. Why? Because the volume of paper silver traded massively outpaces the amount of physical silver available for delivery. And when redemption demand spikes, the system starts to wobble. This is where the manipulation theories start to feel less like conspiracy and more like inevitability. Institutional investors are heavily underexposed to silver, with ETF positions only recently ticking up 8%, still a fraction of where they could be. And some are starting to whisper about a short squeeze. A real one. Not the Reddit-fueled kind, but a systemic break triggered by too much leverage and not enough silver. If even a small percentage of investors start demanding physical delivery instead of settling in cash, the COMEX could be forced to scramble. And when that scramble begins, the price won't climb gradually. It'll gap higher violently. Because in a market this thin, price suppression only works until it doesn't.
Does it tell you gold's gone up? No, it tells you the dollar's gone down. And we've had a constant stream of crises ever since 1933. First of all, there was the devaluation of the dollar. I mean, this is an interesting one because people will say, well, they raised the price of gold from 20.67 up to $35. Really? Actually, what they did was they devalued the dollar by 40%. And then, of course, you had the Bretton Woods thing in 1971, driven off Bretton Woods. Nixon said he suspended it, you know, to stop foreigners speculating and all this sort of garbage that politicians talk about when it comes to what they think is money. But they were driven off it because basically what was happening is that as long as they fixed the dollar at 35 to the ounce, foreigners were just, you know, saying, well, yeah, you know, you can have my dollars. I want the gold at that price. Thank you very much. And from about 1947, 8, round about then, America had 22,000 tons of gold in its reserves. And by the time Bretton was suspended, that went down to 9,000 tons. You know, they were clearly running out. And, you know, at the time, they were having to sort of sweep around, you know, see what they could find left in the Fort Knox vaults. And, you know, a lot of it probably wasn't actually deliverable into markets. So that's what happened. I mean, we've got, for example, I mean, in the UK, as late as 1935, the sovereign, gold sovereign, was worth £1. Today, one sovereign is worth £600. Is it because the sovereign's gone up? No, it's because the pound is rubbish. It's gone down. So this is the message which everybody's got to understand. You know, and this is why the last people who understand it are the people who sort of wake up to the fact that it's not prices going up, but it's the currency going down. And when people actually do understand that, when the general population understands that, the currency is doomed.
Now layer that financial tension on top of a physical crisis, because the supply side of silver is under siege. Global mining output has declined by 2% year over year, with even steeper reductions in the last 12 months due to geopolitical disruptions and tightening regulations. Mines are facing everything from environmental protests to energy shortages and labor strikes, and the result is the same, less silver coming out of the ground. But here's the kicker. While production is falling, demand is skyrocketing. That's not a healthy market. It's a collision course. Over the past year, operational setbacks have reduced global silver output by 5%, and analysts at Bloomberg are already warning that this supply squeeze could turn severe. The market can absorb minor disruptions, but a prolonged or accelerating supply crunch? That's when panic sets in. And unlike gold, silver's industrial role means it's not just investors watching this unfold, it's manufacturers, tech firms, energy giants. If they can't secure the silver they need for production, prices won't just climb. They'll spike. It's basic economics. Constrained supply plus soaring demand equals a break in price equilibrium. And that break may be coming faster than anyone expects.
I mean, what you say is perfectly natural, because you account in dollars and you pay your taxes in dollars. And so from the point of view of whether you're up or down, your risk-free position basically is cash dollars. But this is all an illusion, because what you're looking at is credit. It is a credit risk, which depends on your faith in the Fed. And because it's a federal dollar, it's a federal, you know, it's the Fed's dollar. And in turn, of course, the faith that you might have in the Fed is going to depend very much on the faith in the U.S. government. Now, the reason that foreigners probably recognize this first and domestic users of the dollar recognize it last is obvious, because foreigners, from their point of view, their risk-free position is their own currency. So, you know, let's say, you know, a Brit investing in dollars or whatever, he sees risk because he is accounting in sterling. He pays taxes in sterling. He makes his profits in sterling. So you can see that foreigners are a lot more sensitive to what's going on, let's say, in a foreign currency than domestic users. Domestic users, they don't actually understand the difference between money and credit, gold being money and the rest being credit. And the second thing is that they assume that all the price changes they see prices rising. They think it's not the dollar going down in terms of its purchasing power. They think it's items rising, you know, for whatever reason. I mean, they call it inflation. Actually, inflation is a description of what happens to the quantity of credit. It's a complete misnomer when you're talking about what's actually happening to prices. Prices are rising, they're not inflating. Now, that's a different thing. The only way to look at it really is to understand that the dollar's value in transactions is not a constant. It is something that is moving all the time. And for a long time, it's been moving downwards. I mean, you know, if you look at it in terms of gold, I mean, going back to 1933, you had $20.67 to an ounce of gold. Now you've got $3,400 to an ounce of gold. Well, what does that tell you?
Just before we get going, we just launched the official Silver News Daily Telegram. To kick things off, we're running a 10-ounce silver giveaway. Yes, real physical silver, not a voucher, not digital credits, actual bullion. This Telegram will be our new home for real-time silver discussions, market insights, collection picks, and everything precious metals. It's where the community truly comes alive. Here's how to enter the 10-ounce silver giveaway. Be subscribed to Silver News Daily on YouTube. Turn on the notification bell. Comment 10-ounce giveaway on 3 separate videos. Be an active member of the Telegram group and say hi. Once we hit 500 active Telegram members, we'll pick one lucky winner to receive 10 ounces of silver shipped directly to you. So get in early, stay active. Silver isn't just a monetary hedge anymore. It's become the lifeblood of the green industrial revolution. And right now, its demand from industrial sectors is exploding. In 2025 alone, industrial demand is up 10% year over year, with 3 sectors leading the charge: solar energy, electric vehicles, and advanced electronics. Solar panels now account for 15% of total global silver demand, and that figure is rising fast. Governments around the world are pouring billions into renewable energy mandates, and silver is non-negotiable. It's the best conductor of electricity on Earth, and there's no viable substitute for it in high-efficiency solar cells. Electric vehicles are next in line, consuming 12% of the global silver supply. Every EV battery, connector, and circuit depends on silver to function. As automakers scramble to meet zero emissions goals, the demand curve for silver in transportation alone is going vertical. Add to that the exploding demand in semiconductors, 5G infrastructure, and AI computing, responsible for another 8% of total silver consumption, and you start to see the full picture. This is not optional growth. It's systemic, structural, and accelerating. Silver is no longer just sitting in vaults. It's being used, embedded, and consumed at scale. And once it's in a solar panel or an EV, it's not coming back to market. The recycling pipeline can't keep up, which means as demand races higher and supply continues to falter, we're approaching an inflection point, a moment where the industrial world and the investment world collide. And when they do, the scramble for silver will begin.
They've come up. The first one has actually been passed now by both Congress and Senate, and that is the Genius Act. The two further acts, which are still progressing through the legislative process, are one to move regulation of stable coins away from the away from the SEC to the CFTC, Commodity Futures, whatever, Trading
Commission, yeah.
Commission, yeah. The last one, which is very interesting, is banning the Fed from issuing a CBDC. We'll forget about the one of moving from one regulator to another. I mean, that's just shuffling the deck chairs, isn't it, really? So we won't worry about that. But Genius is interesting because what it does is it embraces stablecoins. I think that there are two reasons for this. The first is that stablecoins issued by the banking system impart no risk to the banks at all. And the great thing about it is that you can expand your stablecoin exposure as much as you like. Well, the reason for this is that if the bank issues a stablecoin to a depositor, yeah, the other side on his asset side, under this legislation, Genius legislation, basically, he's got to go and buy UST bills or hold cash or readily accessible cash. In other words, he's got absolutely no risk at all. In the sense that 3-month treasuries bear no risk at all. You know, I mean, this is you and I might dispute it, but this is regulatory fact. Okay, that's the point. So I mean, at the moment, I was looking at the three-month T-bill, and the yield on there is about 4.35%. So you pick up 4.35% on the other side, and you are banned from paying any interest on your stablecoin. So you've got a clear margin. No expenses. I mean, how wonderful is that? Of course the banks embrace this. I think the problem is that the expansion of stable coins. I mean, at the moment, I think it's around about, I can't remember the figure, something like 300 billion or something. It's not huge. But the expansion of that market isn't actually tied to banks saying, oh, we've got this wonderful new stable, stable coin product. You go switch over your deposits, which give you 2% or whatever, and buy these things, which give you nothing. I mean, that's not a very good marketing ploy. So, I really just don't see that there is any other driver for this than the expansion, or not, of crypto use.
If silver's industrial boom wasn't enough to turn heads, the gold-silver ratio should be the final wake-up call. This ratio, how many ounces of silver it takes to buy 1 ounce of gold, is one of the most powerful signals in the entire precious metals market. And right now, it's flashing red, hovering between 84.7 and 90.38, it's telling us one thing loud and clear. Silver is historically underpriced. To put it in perspective, the long-term average for the ratio is around 50. Every time it's stretched above 80, silver has responded with violent upside. In 1980, when the ratio collapsed from over 80 to below 20, silver went vertical. In 2011, the same pattern repeated. And now, we're sitting right back in that extreme territory. But the setup today is even more potent, because gold has already started its breakout, fueled by central bank buying, inflation, and fiat erosion. That's the trigger. Silver always plays catch-up, but when it does, it doesn't just follow, it overshoots. This ratio isn't just about technical analysis. It reflects investor psychology. When fear spikes and fiat currencies wobble, gold is the first safe haven. But when gold gets too expensive, silver becomes the obvious play. And the cheaper it is relative to gold, the faster that shift happens. What we're seeing now isn't just undervaluation, it's compression. And when compression snaps, the reversion to mean is rarely smooth. It's explosive. The only question is whether investors will be in position before the detonation or after the fallout.
Well, they're all in the same boat. I mean, just look at it from two points of view. I mean, in the G7 nations, all, you know, they've all got high debt to GDPs, when interest rates rise, and they are rising, do not believe that they're falling. If they fall, that's being suppressed, and that kills the currency. You can see that which way this is going for all these currencies. It's almost like a race to the bottom, if you like. The thing about the dollar is that the dollar is the most important fiat currency. And there will come a time when the Dixie starts rallying for the very simple reason that everything else is falling faster than the dollar. That I think is going to happen. My own view on sterling is that sterling is in a huge, great mess. Or more accurately, I'd say that government finances are in a horrendous mess. And so far, this has been ignored because where is the attention? The attention has been on, your wonderful President Trump and all his running around and upsetting things and all the rest of it and trade and big, beautiful bills and so on. So, in terms of bad news, he's been stealing the limelight. That's going to shift. It will shift at some stage. I don't know when. I think it'll be terribly long. So the idea that the Dixie is going to do down and down and down and down is actually not the way to look at it. The dollar is going down and down and down against gold, not Dixie. I mean, I can see the Dixie falling to 90 from the current, 97.5, 98, something like that. That wouldn't surprise me at all. But in the grand scheme of things, that's not all that important. Some people argue that President Trump wants to see the dollar lower. I think he's talked about it. He certainly wants interest rates lower. And I think his attack on Jay Powell is actually very misguided. I think that's a very stupid thing to do. It's completely nonsensical. as indeed, as you know, from a foreign point of view, most of his trade policies are completely nonsensical as well. So, all other currencies are basically in the same boat. And we can see that the yields on longer JGBs are on the rise again. I think we're hitting new highs for, 20-odd years or something, on the yield on the 10-year JGB. And if you go longer, apparently there's absolutely no market in the 30- and 40-year-old maturities. You know, what's going to trigger a new phase in this crisis? We just don't know. With everybody in the same sort of mess, to greater or lesser degrees, it could come from anywhere. And which makes me think that anyone who sort of thinks, oh well, we'll muddle along a bit longer, I think it's holding hostage to fortune. I really do.
As silver builds pressure from below, monetary policy is applying heat from above. The Federal Reserve, locked into a tightrope of economic contradictions, has kept interest rates elevated at 5.25% to 5.50%. Yet inflation remains stubbornly high at 3.2%. That's not stability, it's stagnation. The Fed can't cut without igniting inflation, and it can't raise without crashing the economy. This policy paralysis is exactly the kind of environment where silver thrives. Because silver doesn't just respond to inflation, it responds to distrust. And right now, confidence in central banks is quietly eroding. The monetary tools used to stabilize the economy for decades are becoming ineffective, even counterproductive. Investors are watching this unfold, and they're beginning to act. Safe haven demand is rising. Gold is leading the charge. And silver, once again, is being underestimated, just like in every previous crisis. But the trap is closing. With inflation averaging 3.9% over the past year and debt levels exploding, the Fed is running out of moves. Any pivot toward easing could send the dollar into a deeper spiral, accelerating the rush into hard assets. And unlike stocks or bonds, silver isn't a paper promise. It's a real tangible asset that can't be inflated away. The stage is set for a monetary reckoning. And when the Fed is finally forced to choose between credibility and control, investors will rush for the exits. The problem? There won't be enough silver to go around.
I think that's the sort of innovation, because banks and financial institutions are full of innovation. They will take something, they'll take registration, legislation, they'll see the new regulations, they'll think, oh, now this gives us an idea. Yeah, and I think that's the way it'll go. So I think that's very good. The other bit of this crypto, short of legislation, of course, is the banning of CBDCs. Now, this is no surprise to me. We've talked about this in the past. We've discussed CBDCs. And I think I made it clear that I couldn't see the American banking system supporting CBDCs at all. And on the basis that legislation would have to be introduced to approve the thing, I would have thought that, because the banks basically bankroll all the politicians when it comes to their election expenses. I couldn't see the politicians being encouraged by the banks to vote for it anyway. I think they would say the reverse. If you vote for this, we'll cut you off at the knees. So the CBDC being chucked out and the Fed being told you cannot go down that route, I don't think is all that surprising, but it is terribly important. Because the dollar is the most important fiat currency. And if the Americans have turned around and banned the Fed from going down the CBDC route, then I think, basically, it undermines the entire CBDC concept all around the world. We've had the ECB jumping up and down saying, we're going to be introducing CBDCs and all the rest of it. They're going to have to revise their plans. So if the Americans aren't doing it, they can't do it. It's as simple as that. So I think actually that legislation has done the world a favor.
While most retail investors remain distracted by headlines and hype, a quiet accumulation is underway, and it's not happening in the open. Central banks are loading up on gold, adding over 1,100 tons in 2024 alone. Officially, they're not buying silver. But make no mistake, their actions are speaking volumes. When the stewards of fiat money begin hoarding real assets, It's a signal that confidence in the global monetary system is slipping. And this isn't just about gold anymore. The institutions watching from the sidelines are taking notes. Hedge funds, family offices, and sovereign wealth funds are beginning to reassess their allocations. What they're seeing is a market prime for asymmetric returns. And silver is their quiet entry point. The metal is still off the radar for most, which makes it attractive for accumulation. And while the headlines scream about stocks and crypto, smart money is quietly moving into tangible assets, slowly, steadily, and without making noise. Silver's under-ownership is one of its greatest advantages. ETFs are seeing renewed interest, but they still represent a fraction of potential exposure. Once this rotation becomes public, once the narrative shifts from speculation to protection, the inflows will be fast and unforgiving. At that point, the crowd will finally arrive, but by then, the insiders will already be holding all the cards. This phase of stealth accumulation is nearly over, and when the spotlight swings back to silver, it won't be a gentle glow, it'll be a blinding floodlight.
They're used in payments and settling, and that's where the regulation is being applied. So that makes sense. I think the Treasury quite likes the idea. I mean, it's got no objection because, it helps fund at a time when it's having great difficulty funding, the increasing amount of bonds which are being rolled over every year, as well as, ongoing deficits. So the Treasury is quite happy with it. I think, actually, that, and here's an idea for those who want to, come up with a plan. And, you're welcome to it. And that is, what you do is you put together a package. You put together a stable coin, an assembled stable coin, if you like, which is comprised 50% of gold bullion and 50% stable coin. And what that means is that you can market this as portfolio diversification. Your stable coin is absolutely free risk. Yeah, so you got your $50-50 dollars, as it were, and the bank merely, or the financial institution issuing the stable coins, merely buys in gold to cover the rest. Now, storage of gold is like 7 or 8 basis points in quantity, so that's cheap. Okay. And meanwhile, you got 3.75%, 3.45% on half the total value. To pay for those fees and pay for the marketing and all the rest of it. So suddenly we've got a product which gives sort of 50% gold backing for Joe Public in America. I mean, wonderful. So anyway, I would implore any bank looking for an idea to benefit from the stablecoin regulation, go that way and you'll make a damn fortune. You'll pull in the punters. Go for it. Anyway,
all it takes is a spark, one event, one crisis, to ignite everything we've been building toward. And the list of potential triggers is growing by the day. A major bank collapse, a sovereign debt default, an escalation in geopolitical tensions. Any of these could send investors scrambling for safety. And when that scramble begins, silver will be at the center of it. Why? Because unlike stocks or fiat currencies, silver doesn't rely on confidence. It absorbs chaos. Right now, the global financial system is stretched thin. Debt-to-GDP ratios are soaring, derivatives markets are bloated, and confidence in institutions is cracking. The last time we saw cracks like these, it was 2008. But today, the numbers are bigger, the system is more fragile, and the safety nets are weaker. One domino falls, and the chain reaction begins. And here's the dangerous part. There is no liquidity buffer in the silver market. It's tiny compared to stocks, bonds, or even gold, which means when capital starts to flow in, it won't trickle, it'll flood. A short squeeze, a failed delivery on the COMEX, or even a regulatory shock could send prices into vertical ascent. We've seen how fast silver can move. We've seen how violently suppressed prices can snap. But this time, the catalysts are layered. Monetary failure, industrial scarcity, and geopolitical risk all converging at once. When the next flashpoint hits, there won't be time to prepare. There will only be two types of people left. Those who already own silver, and those who wish they did.
Yeah, it is. Can I just go back onto this CBDC thing? I think the CBDC thing, I think those are dead. Your point about unintended consequences, I think probably applies to the Genius Act rather than CBDCs. Anyway, as to, yes, I mean, the, summer months are very, very quiet. I don't know about in America, but over here, I don't see anybody's really sort of taking any decisions. What they're doing is they're sort of slumping into a, they're saying, oh, everything's terrible. The way the government's going is absolutely terrible, but they're not actually taking any action about it. I see polls which rather suggest that that's the same sort of drifting sentiment in America, if you like. And, you know, with even, you know, Republicans getting sort of rather depressed, if you like, about the whole thing. So I think action is likely to sort of revive, if you like. Usually it revives in around about sort of September time. August is still hot, you know, and it's in the Northern Hemisphere anyway. And, you know, the kids are on holiday and, you know, you're down at the beach or where you're out somewhere drinking tequilas rather than taking life all that seriously. So or you're trying to get away from it, you know, from all this. But no, you're right. I think it is a summer thing. This is why sell in May and go away is usually right. It doesn't mean necessarily that markets go down. It just means that activity in financial markets declines. But the fact that gold has just moved sideways like that, I think, tells us that some trouble is being stored up for the dollar and other currencies later on this year. My view is actually that after this current, if you like, slight pause ahead of option expiry on COMEX and maybe one or two other factors like, you know, the sort of expiry of the August contract, you know, all this sort of stuff. I think that when that's out of the way, we could well begin to see gold move up quite substantially. And, you know, the point, I really do emphasize this point. I mean, with base metals so incredibly cheap on a long-term basis, the cheapest they have ever been in, you know, in, so far as we can recall the information, the price information, that I think basically is going to propel the whole of the metal industry upwards. And we can already see these problems arising. You know, there is a sort of horrible short squeeze in the paper markets on platinum, palladium, silver, copper. Copper is up 50% this year. I mean, imagine that. This is the most important of the base metals, Dr. Copper. Of course, gold. So, yeah, I mean, what an opportunity to just accumulate some of it. Just stash it away. Don't worry if it falls 1% or 2%. Or, you know, it's immaterial because you're getting out of risk. That's the thing. That is the important point. So I think, dollar will be a lot lower. I mean, I'd put it that way. Dollar and other currencies will be a lot lower in the autumn than they are today. And that will be reflected in the value of real money priced in rubbish credit, which is dollars and other currencies.
This is it. Everything we've covered, from the dollar's death spiral to the industrial demand explosion, from suppressed paper markets to central banks quietly preparing for collapse, it all points to one conclusion. Silver is not just an investment, it's an escape hatch. As fiat currencies crumble under the weight of their own excess and institutions scramble to maintain control, silver stands alone as both shield and sword. It's real, it's scarce, and it's primed for a breakout that could leave the first 400 mark in the rearview mirror. But here's the truth. When the system buckles, there won't be time to react. The headlines will come too late. The window to act is now, before the next crisis, before the mainstream panic, before the rush for physical metal strips the shelves bear. If you're watching this, you've already seen what others haven't. So prepare, stay informed, and make your move while you still can. And if you want to stay ahead of the storm, hit that subscribe button so you never miss a critical update in this unfolding monetary reset. This is not financial advice. Always speak to a licensed professional before making any financial decisions.